Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Friday, September 17th, 2021. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice and the website at whyagain.org. If you go to that page and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner, it'll take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of the book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. It's a tool I've been using to great effect for over 17 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships. And it's a tool that I've also been able to use to turn any negative emotional experience into part of the infallible guidance system that each one of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. Nothing's withheld there. It's a PDF file. Click on it, download it, print it off, and use it as often as you'd like. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words, Heartland, Aramaic, Forgiveness, and get access to a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. You can also download a whole host of audio files of shows just like this one where people have been stepped through the use of that worksheet or given powerful testimonials about how the use of that worksheet process has improved the quality of their life. And if you go and do those things, download the worksheet, read the chapter of the book, use the worksheet in your life, it will usually prompt people to have comments or questions. And if you have comments or questions, that's why we're here. Give us a call at 563-999-3581. When you call that number and press 1, it'll put a question mark by your phone number, and I'll announce you by your area code. Today is the 260th day of the year, and we are doing the Course in Miracles lessons from the workbook, along with the Pam Grout's Course in Miracles experiment commentary. Today's lesson reads, Let me remember that the Creator created me. Father, I did not make myself, although in my insanity I thought I did. Yet, as your thought, I am just an expression of your thought, and so I have not left my source. I remain part of who you created me. Your son, my father, calls on you today. Let me remember that you created me. Let me remember my identity and let my sinlessness, my perfect safety, arise before Christ's vision through which I would look upon my brothers and myself today. Now is our source remembered, and therein we find our true identity at last. Holy and whole indeed we are, because our source can know no error, no sin. And we who are the offspring of creation are like each other and alike to the Creator. In Pam Grout's Course in Miracles experiment lesson, number 260, is titled, Are You Picking Up What Source is Laying Down? She quotes Les Brown as saying, Don't be a garbage can for anything that does not feed your intellect. Stimulate your imagination or make you a more compassionate and peaceful person. Refuse to open your mind to other people's trash. Pam writes, Before he married Gladys Knight or became an Ohio congressman or started teaching people to follow their dream, Les Brown was a student of Johnny Coleman, an amazing New Thought minister from Chicago. After graduating from her Johnny Coleman Institute, he agreed to recruit participants for her Universal Foundation for Better Living. He came into her office one day with his head down. Quote, I just don't understand, he said. I've been working my butt off, and I've only been able to sign up 7 people. And Johnny took one look at him and said, Les, that's because you've only got 7 people consciousness. Source consciousness is infinite. There is literally no limit to its generosity. It shows up in my life depending upon how much I pick up what it's laying down. I can pick up 7 people consciousness, or I can be like high-energy motivational speaker Les Brown, who, like Lesson 260 promises, he threw that ridiculous limit aside and took up instead with his true divine identity. Let me remember that I am the offspring of the Creator. So, that's our Course in Miracles workbook lesson and the Course in Miracles experiment commentary. And as usual, we've got about 50 minutes left for comments, questions, testimonials, answers, suggested topics, etc. 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1, we can have a conversation. What's on your mind today? Those of you who are tuning in, do you have something that you would like to have us explore? Is there a worksheet you'd like to have us help you frame out? I have someone with a hand up. Is this Ellen?
Yes, it is. Hi, Dr. Tim.
Hello, Ellen.
I have some questions about the forgiveness process. I on yesterday's show, you had mentioned about the YouTube video that's out there that has like the first hour of Dr. Michael Rice's presentation, and I had never listened to that, so I decided to go out and listen to it. And in that, towards the end, he talks about you know, how everyone sees things differently based on their brain cells. And, you know, his example was a marker. And, you know, he was explaining that, you know, he's holding a marker up in the air and saying that no one here is seeing the same marker, the actual marker. And as he went through that explanation, and he gave a couple examples of kids that had different experiences with markers, it brought up something that has been an issue for me. It came to light earlier this year when I was doing one of the Course in Miracles lessons. I think it was the one that I don't see things as they are. And as I was practicing that lesson and my eyes fell upon the door in my room and I said, I don't see this door as it is, I really made the connection between his why is this happening to me again issue I've had with doors and an experience that I had as a baby that I was shown through a spontaneous regression related, and there was a door issue in that experience. And I made that connection. It was like, oh, I don't see doors as they are. I'm so, you know, closed doors. That's the issue for me. And that's been the, you know, when I looked at, oh, my God, what's been my issue with doors is they don't close. And, you know, I've gone through, I can't tell you how many doors I've had repaired in the houses I've lived in because they don't close. And in the experience that I had as a baby, the closing, it was actually a slamming of my bedroom door. I saw that how I had associated that with danger. Because now, because I had been crying for my, I was crying for my mother at the time. I needed my mother, and my brother got so upset at my crying because I didn't know, well, I just found out recently that my mother purposely didn't attend to me when I cried because my father didn't want me to get spoiled. So my brother got so upset at my crying that he came and he slammed my door. And so I associated that closing of the door, well, there was a few, this is definitely a Hydra issue for me, but one of the things that I associated with that was danger, because it was like my lifeline to my mother was now cut off. So, and my understanding of the worksheet process is that when we go through the process of recognizing what our goal is in the situation and then canceling that goal, that's to get to that part of your mind that is creating the emotional upset. And in this case, like this came to me, I wasn't even doing a worksheet, like I said, I was just doing a Course in Miracles lesson, and I made that connection. And because, you know, it was a great blessing that I was taken, you know, into that experience through a spontaneous regression. Otherwise, I never would have remembered that had happened to me. So I've made that connection. And my understanding of the forgiveness process is that once the error is perceived, and it is met with who you really are, the essence of love, that's when the healing or the removal of the error takes place, gets resolved. Correct?
That's the theory, yes.
Okay. So I've sat with that, and I, for whatever reason, I've never felt a release around that issue. And I don't know if this is because it's a Hydra or if there's just something I'm missing. I feel like I'm missing something. And the thing is, it just came up again recently. I'm in the process of remodeling the third floor of my house, and all the doors up there were working fine. But I decided to change the hardware because the original hardware was just crap. And I thought, okay, let me put on nice hardware. And so all I did was replace the hinges, the old hinges with brand new hinges. And when I did that, the door no longer works. It doesn't even begin to close. So it was like, oh, no. Oh, no. And, of course, that, you know, like, and I got, you know, I get frustrated in those situations, but I know that that's not the, you know, there's an underlying emotion, and I really do believe it's fear. It's that danger that I felt that I'm not going to get the help that I need, that, you know, whatever, I don't even know what I was crying for at the time in that particular situation, because I feel a sense of helplessness. I mean, that's what I experienced with this latest door episode. It's like, oh, no. You know, like, as self-reliant as I have become in my life, that's one thing that I would need help with. And then it's not something that I can, you know, do on my own. So, but anyway, I thought, well, why else would this, things don't happen randomly. Why else would this occur unless it's helping me to see that this issue is still not resolved?
Well, whether it's happening for you or you can turn it into that something that's useful. Either I don't know the truth of, is the universe arranging this so that you'll look at that issue? I don't know. Could you stop and look at that issue? Yes. Right? Can you use the fact that replacing the hinges on the doors leads the doors to not open and how that triggers you to think about this issue? Could you use that to go do more work? Absolutely. So here's the thing. The first thing that comes to mind, like several times while you were talking, is Ellen is using her intellect, decidedly above average intellect, to try to figure this out. And that, as Dr. Michael Rice talks about, is the number one trap of the pseudo-mind, pseudo-solution of the non-being mind, he calls it. So when you say, I know what this is now because it's a safety thing, et cetera, when this happened when I was younger and I couldn't get access to my mother because my brother slammed the door, et cetera. When you say that, you have made a decision. And that doesn't necessarily mean you're on to the big issue or the one thread that will unravel the whole issue. So just understand that, right? If it just keeps me in the game, this assumption doesn't have to be true, right? The assumption that when I see the thing at the bottom of it, it wipes everything else out. You know that assumption that you mentioned earlier that several spiritual traditions talk about? The Course in Miracles says, I need only return to the original error in thought in order for all of the negative effects of that thought to be dismantled. You know
right.
that kind of thing? That doesn't have to be true. I don't need that to be true. But if I keep using it and it keeps me in the game, that's good enough because it has me continually going back to the tools and asking to be shown what I cannot figure out with the conscious logical mind. So let's say, you know, you want a little bit of intellectual salve or motivation to continue to do worksheets around this, but because you think you found the whole thing and the core of it, and it didn't go away yet. So here's a little bit of intellectual prompting that might motivate you to just go back and do more worksheets. What if when that happened and you were this baby, child, infant, toddler, whatever stage you were, and the door got slammed and you had the fear that you couldn't get access to your mother, that's one of the things that you downloaded at that time. But what if it's only one of many, or, you know, six or seven or three or five or whatever? And what if another one was something to do with, there's something wrong with me, I'm not good enough, I don't deserve, et cetera?
Definitely there, because, you know, before the door slammed, my mother wasn't coming, and I know I took on the belief that I don't matter. That's why I said I'm sure this is a Hydra issue. Because I know that was all part of that same scenario. I was trying to focus, because I know there's more than one emotion there, and I was trying to focus on the fear emotion, but I also believe that there's this deep hurt that I was neglected by, you know, my mother wouldn't come when I would cry, and she didn't meet those needs that I had. So I know that there's more than one worksheet to do around that particular scenario, but I was just trying to focus on the one, which was like the fear aspect of it.
Okay, but then you know, when you're asking, what's the matter, if I got to the core, why isn't it gone? Because there may be 2, 3, 5, 17 different core issues.
Okay, see, I was thinking that
look, here's one. One thing is what happened in that moment, right, and what got downloaded then. And there might be more than just one core issue or belief about yourself or dynamic emotion or trauma energy that got downloaded in that moment. So then I leave that moment and I go on. I'm lucky enough to survive in my life. And 2 or 3 years later, I have an interaction with somebody or the world or myself trying to interact with other people, and a very similar energy gets resonated, and it solidifies or strengthens that negative belief about myself that got downloaded when my brother slammed the door when I was a kid. And then 5 years after that, there have been 3 or 4 more other things that seem to have the same energy resonance with this negative belief about self, and so it gets stronger and bigger and more scary to look at for my, maybe I'm saying, you know, like I'm an 8-year-old now who doesn't have a whole lot of mature coping mechanisms and a worldview. And so I run from it, hide it, make it seem even bigger. And so that's how these things can get layer upon layer of complexity. And yeah, they might be tied to that original event, but just doing worksheets on that original event may not be enough to unravel all of the effects of that energy in my system.
Yeah, I mean, this is something that I've looked at in a lot of depth, and yes, there was. I mean, it was about that feeling of being rejected or shut out happened all the time when I got a little bit older and I would start raging. I mean, my parents would send me to my room and close the door, and I would have to be in isolation. And so I know that I have a judgment. I have a real judgment against, you know, I developed a real judgment against closed doors. So, and then also too, you know, I mean, just all the closed door. I mean, there was always slamming doors in the house. People were so angry in my house. Doors were always slamming. Doors were always closed. No one sat in their room with the door open. So, yes, I see how all of these events added on, you know, to that original association that a closed door is a bad thing. And so I kind of find it very humorous that, you know, now I'm like, so now I have this issue where I have doors that won't close. So I actually find it very humorous. If it weren't so frustrating, it would be funny.
So let's come back to, because you said you had a question about the forgiveness process, and I feel like we've drifted away from that. What's the specific question you had prompted by that lecture that I might help you with?
Well, I guess I've experienced that feeling of release, you know, when true forgiveness happens with other issues. And I just haven't experienced it with this issue. And even though, like, I've gone there and I've been, like, you know, with my infant self and holding her and assuring her that everything is safe and that, you know, it really has nothing to do with doors and it has nothing to do with her. I mean, she didn't do anything wrong. And, you know, I mean, I've gone and I've done a lot of work around that and feeling like I'm really the presence of love with this fear. And I've never felt that, I guess, that release that I know that comes with, you know, true forgiveness, the resolving of the issue. So I didn't know if I was just missing something or if it was because this is a hydra and that until I work through all of the other pieces of it, I'm not going to be able to get to that.
Well, I imagine that if Dr. Rice were here, he would say this is one of your 77 times 70 worksheet issues. What does that refer to? 7 is the number of completion, and when you add 0 to a number, it means infinity. And so when somebody says, how many times do we have to do the forgiveness process, and the other person says 77 times 70, what they're saying is you have to be willing to use the tool on this set of issues an infinite number of times until there's resolution. And most of us, you know, it wasn't intended to be an actual mathematical number, like a finite number, because you can multiply out 77 times 70. Most of us have never even done that many worksheets. But it wasn't intended to be a finite number. It was intended to be referenced to an infinite number until there is resolution. So when I had a trauma that happened when I was a baby in a crib, and then it's been compounded for years because of the family I lived in and the anger and the slamming of doors and all those things that you just talked about, it's not likely going to get resolved with any finite number of worksheets. I want to understand that I will forever have vigilance around this issue or about the triggers for this issue. And that's the only thing that's going to keep me functioning at a high level, having vigilance for when I do get triggered. I must assume I will probably always be triggered to one degree or another around these kinds of issues and this kind of trigger. And when I make that assumption, then I leave myself willing to do the work whenever I get triggered. And then I keep the space open for myself to continue to grow and heal. But when I have a plan to be done with an issue, I basically set myself the impossible task and a trap that I cannot escape from.
Okay. So let me ask you this then. So then the multiple or infinite number of worksheets, it's the same worksheet? Is that what you're saying?
And it's not necessarily the worksheet. It's the forgiveness process. It's the recognition that all of the upset that I'm experiencing is created from an inside job, and that as I hold a goal for anything in my life and my internal and external life to be different that I don't have any control over, that's what initiates my negative emotional state, nothing else.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you might do Byron Katie's worksheets. You might do Ho'oponopono. You might do the Sedona Release Method. You might do Michael Rice's worksheet. You might do Diedrich Wolzak's six-step choose again process an infinite number of times until you feel like you're not triggered anymore. And there's with something that's this deep in your psyche and your life experience, it's not likely that you're going to get to the point where you're not triggered at all anymore about it.
Okay.
But
okay,
you can always make progress on it and get triggered less and less intensely and recover from it faster and have it be a less disruptive force in your life. That's the value of this work to me. The value of this work to me is not to set myself up so I never get triggered again. I think if I ever get to the point where I think I never get triggered again, I'm going to be hallucinating and I'm going to be a dangerous person. I'm going to be walking around getting triggered and blaming it on other things and people. As long as I'm still in a body and drawing a breath, there will be the potential for me to get triggered. And that's okay, because that's my warning signal that there's something off the mark in my perception, and I can use tools to clarify my perception and move on with life in a more loving way. If my goal is to never get triggered again, basically what my goal is saying is I want to learn to ignore the alarm system that the Creator established for me. And that's not a wise thing to do. When the alarm goes off in your house for smoke or carbon monoxide or whatever, the wise thing to do is pay attention.
Right. I guess what I'm, since I know, okay, I don't even want to say that. So are you saying I don't have to, in order to do the forgiveness part, that doesn't mean I got to start at the top of the worksheet and do all of, because I know the underlying issues, you know, as far back as, at least in this lifetime as it goes, that it's the forgiveness part of it, allowing that upset to be there and at the same time bring that love to it. That's the part that needs to be repeated over and over and over again.
Well, and in Michael Rice's work, it looks like figuring out what goal I'm holding, because there won't ever be an upset, a negative emotion in me unless I'm holding a goal that's not getting met. So, you know, in Michael Rice's work, it means figuring out what the goal is, canceling the goal, and asking to be shown, putting my conscious logical mind on the side for now and stepping into the insight, the intuition, asking a higher power, Ruka, whatever, Holy Spirit, the Great Comforter, asking for that insight and connection and letting it be revealed, getting out of the conscious logical mind that wants to figure it out. So that's Dr. Michael Rice's forgiveness process. Byron Katie's work is really dig into what's the negative thought that I'm believing, because I only suffer when I believe my negative thoughts. And if I step into the process of deeply questioning, what can I actually know? What if it's true? What if it's not true? What's the impact on me when I believe it's true? What would my life be like when I let it go? What if the opposite's actually true? What if my perception has brought things to such a level of distortion that the opposite might be true, and what would that feel like? So I unravel, I unpack the same stuff, the same internal dynamics with a slightly different focus, and that's Byron Katie's work of questioning every thought. Right? There's Diedrich Wolzak. He has almost exactly the same process. It's slightly different, but it comes from the Course in Miracles work. And his thing is, I start with the recognition that I'm really triggered. I don't minimize it. The second step is, I understand this is happening inside me. It's not useful to blame anyone or anything outside of me for this upset. The third step is, identify what emotion I'm feeling. He even provides an emotion chart or wheel for that. The fourth step is I ask, okay, have I ever felt this emotion before? And the answer is always going to be yes, because his assumption is in your first 8 years of life, you create all of the emotional experiences that you'll then just repeat throughout your life. And so the fifth step is I ask, okay, what's one of the earliest times I remember having this emotion? And I do. It's basically like the forgiveness pattern. I ask to be shown. I release any attachment. I quit trying to figure it out, and I just let stuff bubble up. Oh, I remember one of the first times I felt this was I was in eighth grade. And if I see a situation from eighth grade, I go there, and I remember the situation, and then I breathe, and I ask myself, what did I make this mean when this emotion arose, when this situation happened in eighth grade? And it will be there. There will be a negative belief about myself and or the world that gets clear in step five. And then step six, his forgiveness process is, I forgive myself for believing the false, the negative, and I forgive myself for forgetting that my true nature is perfect and sinless and completely safe and internal, my value is internal and unchanging. And I just keep going back and forth between the adult self and the younger self, doing those two forgiveness statements until I feel a shift. It's the same basic work. I have to understand that if I have a negative emotion or a tension in my system anywhere, It's self-induced nonsense, my favorite acronym for sin. It's a self-produced process. So it's the unraveling of that, which usually means putting the conscious logical mind aside, which is the hardest thing for us Westerners, right? Quit trying to figure it out and just use your tool of choice over and over and over again.
Yeah, I mean,
remember, go ahead.
Just a couple things. Yeah, I mean, I was specifically focusing on the incident, the recent incident with the door, which clearly my goal was that, and you know, it's the same issue with all the issues I've had with the doors, and you know, the goal being that you know, I want the doors to function properly. I want to be able to close the doors. So that just takes me to the same place every time, which is fine if that's what I need to do.
Okay, listen, stop for a minute. I have to interrupt you because of what you just said.
Okay, because I don't want to...
You're tracing this back to this incident where the door got slammed, right?
Yeah.
And you keep saying, I just want the doors to close. But there must be a part of you, you know, I was about to say, it could have nothing to do with that. It's a carpentry issue and the hinges, right? But another part of you, as a child, did not want that door to close.
Well, absolutely.
Right. So you keep saying, I just want the door to close and work properly. Well, guess what? At that metaphysical level, at that emotional level, there's another part of you that doesn't want these doors to close, period.
Well, that's exactly the problem. That's what I identify. Yes.
I know. And the other thing is, anybody knows who's done any carpentry that hanging a door is a special art. And if you mess with the hinges on a door, it's as common as your next breath that it's not going to work right. So there's a level at which this is just a good trigger. It's not that you're... emotional energy is creating a problem with the door. It's just that because there's a problem with the door, it's alerting you to this, oh, my mind keeps going back to this thing when I was a kid, so there must be some more stuff back there for me to clear up.
Mm-hmm.
And then you take the pressure off yourself and understand, you know, if you get a good carpenter in there, an expert at door hanging, the doors will work fine, and you don't have to wait until you resolve your emotional issues around that to get the doors to work.
This is what all of this talk has brought me a new insight. As you were, you know, talking there for a while, what came to me was a belief. I don't know that I've ever uncovered this one before or not, but it's very important, and this is the one that I need to work on, which is that I can't be helped. And that is what I feel whenever, like with this whole issue with the door just happened, because I had so many doors that needed to be fixed, and I finally found someone who could fix doors, and then I think he got so tired of fixing so many of my doors that the last time I called him, he just I called him several times and he just wouldn't call me back. So I was like, okay, I guess he doesn't want to fix my doors anymore. So it's this is the issue that I need to work on, which you helped me identify, that I have this belief that I wasn't aware of, that I can't be helped. And this, I see how this goes all the way back, because I didn't receive the help that I needed as a child. Emotionally, I was a wreck. And my parents didn't do anything about it except shove me in my room and close the door. You know, so there was this intense desire to be helped and not to get, oh boy, here it comes,
soften and hold the air in and do a slow exhale. Nice, slow, controlled exhale. It's okay to cry. And keep the breath moving in that way that helps really tell your body unmistakably, this isn't life and death. So I have strong emotions coming. I can feel them. I can let them be there. I can let them flow through me. And I can control the exhale on the breathing so it calms my nervous system. And that can let me be there with these thoughts and emotions more fully.
Yeah, I think I got to the point where I just assumed that there was no help for me and that I couldn't be helped. And I remember feeling so scared that I was going to end up in a mental institution, that they were going to lock me away for good if I didn't find a way to stop expressing my feelings.
That's perfect. Stay with it. Just breathe. That false thought will generate a tremendous amount of negative energy. So just breathe and notice that's a big key for you. Breathe and soften. I'm too much. I can't be helped. There's no way out. I'm going to end up in a mental health institute, locked away. Just breathe. Let it come up and notice what comes up with it. Notice the energy you feel as you keep the breath moving slowly.
I don't know, I feel like I'm getting in my head now. And I know it's like this, it's such a fear of allowing the feeling, because that's what was causing the problem for me, was the feelings that I was feeling and, you know, letting them out. And it wasn't until I stopped.
It wasn't until you stopped that what happened?
That I was seen as okay. Everyone thought I was okay once I found a way to stop feeling.
Okay, just breathe.
And there's a part of me that's so angry that I gave in. You know, angry at myself. But I felt like I didn't have a choice. I felt like I was going to be locked away if I continued to feel.
Okay, perfect. And then they can do the worksheets on the anger. You don't want to get too focused on the anger, though, because as we understand, the anger is always this drug or cover-up for pain or fear or sadness. So you'll have more productive worksheets when you do them on the pain and the fear and the sadness. But let yourself have that. Let yourself, you know, come back to this the archive of this show and just listen to the tone, listen to the insights, and start doing worksheets around those issues like you identified earlier. This is a hydra. And it, you know, as with almost any hydra, the core of it is, what are the negative beliefs that I have downloaded and I operate in my life as though they are absolutely true? That's the, you know, the basic definition of a belief. I think this is true. And when I think this is true, it generates these thoughts that go along with that belief over and over and over again. And unless I find a set of tools like this to interrupt that process, then I have an endless stream of these hurtful, negative thoughts that I'm constantly either covering up or battling with or blaming on others. So soften. Yeah. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, what's so interesting about this particular belief that I uncovered is that I came up against it every time, like I never did, you know, after my parents didn't get me any help and I just, I don't know, somehow found a way to stop feeling all those feelings. I never reached out for help as an adult. But I didn't even remember, really, that all the stuff that had happened. You know, it was just totally out of my mind at that point, and I was focused on career and all these other things. And then when I finally did, you know, when everything came back up later in life, and I was like, oh, wow, you know, I really need help with this stuff. And I finally got myself in therapy. This particular belief that I can't be helped, right, totally interfered with exactly what I was trying to do, which was to get help. So it's so interesting because that's exactly what just reared up today when you started trying to help me.
Yep, there it is. I can't be helped.
Yeah.
Sorry. Sorry that you have this powerful tool. Sorry that you have all of these desires to help me, but, you know, the truth is I can't be helped.
I mean, I know, it's ridiculous, right? But, yeah,
no,
there it is.
No, it's very real. It's very real. Yeah. We create, this is why Dr. Michael Rice talks about our realities. It's not the actuality, but the reality that each of us creates is what we use to create our experience of life. And when you're holding the reality that you cannot be helped, you create an experience that proves it to you. You ask your mind, show me the proof that I can't be helped. And you're
not
even doing it consciously at that point. It's just an automatic process. And your mind will show you time and again the evidence that you cannot be helped.
And it happens through resonance, right? Because I think that, like, for example, the therapist that I went to initially, I don't know if it was just that it was this issue within me that resonated with this particular therapist who she wasn't there for me. I mean, it was like, but I don't think it was me in general. I just think she was not a good therapist, but that I was drawn to her, or she was drawn to me, I don't know which way it is, but because of that belief that I had that I can't be helped. So I'm naturally going to pull, you know, into my experience someone that isn't going to be able to help me.
Or someone who has every resource and willingness to help you, and your perception does not allow you to see that that's potential, that that can happen. And so you create an experience of not being helped in the middle of the perfect set of resources to help you. I remember the woman, Dr. Christiana Northrup, years ago, before she started doing all of the controversial stuff she's doing now, she told a story of how she thought that she really needed a good marital therapist to help her husband see what he's missing, the problem. So she went, like, across the country, found the best therapist she could. They went there, like, for an extended weekend, did all the testing at all the individual and joint sessions, and they were getting together in the therapist's office for the big final summary, et cetera, and laying out the plan to fix him. And the therapist said to her, and she's sitting there next to her husband in front of the therapist's desks, and the therapist said to her, well, here's the analogy I have for you. Christiana, you are sitting in a shallow little rowboat in the middle of a pristine, glacier-fed, crystal-clear, most pure water on the planet, and you're screaming, I'm so thirsty, give me water. And Christine said, what are you talking about? And the therapist said, we've interviewed you, we've talked to him, we've done the testing, we've had the self-reports, the mutual other reports. She said, you have a husband who turns himself inside out, upside down, 7 days a week trying to prove his love for you. And you find this little speck of dust in the corner of the room and say, look, if he loved me, he would get rid of that dust. So you might have been with a therapist who was willing to connect with you and willing to go in, and you would just not see it. You would literally, your mind would prevent you from seeing what that therapist had to offer, simply because that belief, I can't be helped, was getting resonated. You know, the Course in Miracles has a line where it says, we must come to understand the distorting power of the way we want things to be. And that's not necessarily what I want at a conscious level. That can be what I want driven by this ironclad belief that's a taproot, deep, deep issue in me that I just know I can't be helped. And that will distort my perception.
Yeah,
so if you can,
I mean,
just soften into that. Just what if it's not as complex as your mind is making it? What if you didn't attract all of these people in your life that were inept therapists? What if you're like Christiana Northrup, you're sitting in this beautiful lake and you're unable to see the water that's right there? We all do that, every one of us. That's the core of this work.
Yeah, but I guess this is part of the hydra of this whole issue, because when I got to a point, you know, there were points during this therapy where I would, you know, be at home and I would get to a very critical point of really needing to talk to her. And I would call, and she would never return the phone call. She wouldn't even get back to me, like, if this was on a weekend, she wouldn't even get back to me on Monday. And then I'd go in the next week and see her, and she would, like, make some sort of flippant excuse, or she wouldn't even mention it. And I'd think, my God, I really needed you. Like, so, I mean, I don't know. I mean, but see that, but this is, again, like, it goes back to, I see how this relates to my mother. Yeah, I really needed my mother, and she didn't come. She didn't respond to me either. It's like this lack of response. So I think,
well,
this is all.
And here's another thing that's come to me several times in this call alone. You keep saying, I really needed my mother. I need it, I need it, I need it. So if you come into redefining, right, clarifying your definitions for need, mm-hmm. The essence of it is from the definition of the word need. You did not need your mother. How do we know that? Because you survived and she wasn't there. She didn't do what you wanted, right? You wanted your mother, but she did not supply your wants. Absolutely. And if you start talking about it that way, instead of she didn't give me what I needed, then just watch how it changes, how it feels to you when you look back at those memories and what your perception of it is. This therapist didn't give you what you wanted, just like your mother didn't give you what you wanted. But every time you say they didn't give me what I needed, you're beginning with the premise that there's something missing in you, that you're damaged or broken.
Right.
And you keep reinforcing that with this language that I needed this and I didn't get it, which means there's something still missing in you. So from the other tool that Michael Rice teaches, that regulatory speech, it would be very helpful for your processing to catch that wording and change it just to see how it feels to you, to substitute the word, I wanted this and I didn't get it, as opposed to saying, I needed this and I didn't get it.
Well, just from my own experience, you know, like when I was, I don't know what I actually didn't need in that earliest, you know, when I was just an infant. But I do remember what it felt like when I would go in, you know, those feelings of, it was rage on the outside. I don't know what it was on the inside, but, or underneath that. But when I would feel those feelings, I literally thought I was going to die. So for me, it really did feel like a need. Like I needed someone to help me, and I did survive, you're right, but it was so black. It was so scary. I really didn't know if I was going to survive.
I get it. It's absolutely the case. I get it. I get it. And so I believe that I have this need, right?
Yeah.
I believe that I have this need, but my belief is not the same thing as the actuality. And so there is a strength in you. There is an intelligence, a sensitivity, and a strength and a perseverance in you that when you were a child, you did not know you had.
Right.
And it's still there. But from that perspective where I don't know my strength, I don't really know my ability to survive, I don't really know my intelligence and my emotional sensitivity, I can formulate negative conclusions about myself that as long as I hold on to them, then they drive my perception. Was this
right.
a miserable situation? Absolutely. Think about Diedrich Wolzak's situation.
Yeah.
Absolutely miserable. He was his first 3.5 years of life in a concentration camp. Everywhere he went for his first 8 or 12 or 15 years of life, he was bullied and abused and absolutely horrible. Does that create who he is once he finds the tools and works on it? No. Did he have strength and insight, intuition, intelligence, creativity that he didn't even know he had? Yes. You have those things too. The fact that you didn't know them created your experience of needing them. So we're down to the last minute, so go ahead and finish that thought.
I don't even remember what it was. But no, I think I was just going to say, yeah, I recognize that I did survive all of that, and therefore I can handle these feelings. And, you know, I just keep reminding myself that there isn't anything I can't handle. I mean, whatever life brings up, I can handle it. I can handle it. Because, you know, I'm not alone here. I always thought I was alone, and now I know I'm not alone. So.
All right. Well, I appreciate the call and all the work you're doing. It's benefiting you and millions of others, as the Course in Miracles would say. I will look forward to our next contact. I appreciate your willingness to work and share with us on the show. I'll mute you. Thank you so much for your time. And I'll remind us all that we come from love. We're made of this stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Michael and Jeannie Rice.
Hi, how are you
doing? Thank you, Dr. Tim.
Excellent conversation. Yeah. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. Today is Friday, September the 17th, 2021. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and that puts you in queue to talk to us. And I'm going to turn Ellen's microphone back on. And, Michael, welcome. Ellen, is there anything else that we can continue to support you in?
That's a good question. I just appreciate the support, you know, because that was the thing that I always felt like I was missing in my life. Just knowing that there is support is very helpful to me. I think I have a lot to work on here that, you know, there's more that got uncovered. So I need to start there because I feel like I've been over the same ground again and again and haven't felt any relief. But this is clearly like the big monstrous hydra in my particular life. And so I think I just need to do, you know, continue doing the work on all the different things that are feeding into it.
Well, we join in holding the space in whatever's at the root of this particular process you're going through, being able to surface in safety and support. And, you know, there's an awesome song out there that I've thought about writing to Bette Midler and asking her to change the words just slightly. And the line in the song that I'd love to see Bette Midler change is the song that says, God is watching us. And the line in the song says, God is watching us from a distance. And I think a message could be delivered to so much of the world that's ready to hear it. If she would redo that song with the truth, God is watching us from within us.
Mm-hmm.
There's where the support really is. And that's
exactly
what we're working to link every mind, heart, and being on the planet to that knowledge, to that awareness, and to that support.
Yeah, and I think as I become aware, more and more aware of that, the outer support is showing up for me. You know, and I think that's the way it works.
Absolutely.
I wasn't aware of any inner support, and I didn't seem to have any outer support, and now that is all changing because I have been, you know, really becoming aware of the inner support. So, yes, thank you for that. I have
well,
to keep reminding myself, though, because it's so easy to forget at times.
Well, and that's because we've had implanted conflicting realities. I mean, generations and generations of generations who didn't know who they were, didn't function
right
out of who they were, told themselves stories, and those stories got passed on to us environmentally and through our genetics. And uncovering it is it's a major piece of work. I mean, when you start, you know, I'd ask you a question I've asked several people over the years. Is there anybody in your family system you think of, mom, dad, aunts, uncles, cousins, anybody in your family system that could support you in this conversation? And most often people's answer is like, are you kidding me? And when you're the early adopter, it's like, you know, moving through mountains of untrue evidence that's held in the mind that keeps us out of the truth. And it sure takes courage to face and move through those things. So accolades to Dr. Tim for being the space to open and bring that healing into your awareness on a new level. And accolades to you for being willing to, for having the brain cells to hear it and say, I go for it. As he said, you know, the course is really clear there. The energy field that we create as we do this, millions yet unborn will benefit. And that's the objective here. Let's change the tide from the insane world of hostility and fear, and each face whatever it is that needs to be faced and undone, to make the next person our bloodline instead of an early adopter, a beneficiary.
Yes, I agree.
One of the conversations Jeannie and I often have with our granddaughter, she's now been circling the earth for 3 years, and our conversation, pardon me, oftentimes is, and we ask to be guided to build the brain cells for how to bring awareness to her these principles of life and mind and function and body, to bring them forward in a way that she benefits from the work we do to the max and is able to be a light and a shining star in the world to bring it forward, if in no other way than just through her, the way she lives her life. And, you know, as we join in that project, I love what Jonas Salk says, and I think it's a far more important thing than his Salk vaccine, and that is, he says, the most important thing to be is a good ancestor. So accolades to you for being a good ancestor and saying, I'm going to keep opening the gate on this and deal with what my generations haven't been able to.
Right. Right. Well, I know your granddaughter is blessed to have you and Jeannie for grandparents, that's for sure. You know, and I know it's no fault of my parents' own, you know, they were caught up in all of it just the way everyone is, and I don't, you know, I'm well beyond the point of blaming them for anything. But yeah, it's difficult when you don't feel like you have the support in your family. You know, my father was, I was blessed that my father came around and was doing work on himself, and he became my spiritual mentor when I got older. And you know, unfortunately, he's no longer here. But I did get to, you know, he brought,
or at least no longer in his body. Is that what I'm hearing?
Right. Yeah.
He may
be
here. Wouldn't surprise me in the least if he's still there.
Yes, and
I've seen
so many cases
working with people who a deceased parent came in and just flooded them with the empowerment and the support and the love and the guidance that they couldn't do when they were in their bodies. So I suspect probably he's still around offering that support.
I did have an experience with him, and it was, I was sleeping, but it was like no dream that I ever had. I mean, I was sitting exactly where I'm sitting at this moment in this dream, looking out my front window, and all of a sudden there's my father coming up the steps onto my porch, and I recognized his shirt he was wearing, everything, although he was younger than he was when he made his transition, and I was, of course, shocked but overjoyed, and I immediately ran to the door and opened the door, and I really thought I was awake, and I was like, how can this be? How, you resurrected yourself. I was like, how can this be? And we, you know, like we had a hold of each other by our arms, and then, you know, we're staring at each other in the eyes, and I'm saying this to him, and then we just hugged, And I was opening my eyes, and but it was physical. It was like I was literally hugging him. It was not like he was a figment of my imagination or a dream. It was so real. And I knew.
Sounds like a meeting. Yeah, it sounds like a meeting on the level of being.
Mm-hmm. It was wonderful. And I think he was here to help my mother because a couple weeks later she made her transition. And although they did not get along at all, you know, I knew he would be there to support her through that. And so I think that's why he was hanging around.
Right. Sweet.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Well, joining and receiving all the support that's available.
Oh, thank you so much.
And, of course, one of the ways of receiving that support is to pass it on to another.
Right.
You know, who's in your family system that's struggling that you can be reaching out to and offering a hand up and teaching and understanding that just perhaps isn't available to them anywhere else.
Yeah, unfortunately, my siblings and I really don't have much contact with each other. And, I mean, we have had more recently since my mother, you know, started her, you know, when things started going downhill for her physically. But, you know, they're all kind of locked in their own, you know, ways and not really open to the things that my father and I were open to spiritually.
Right.
So I don't even know what, if I'm sure they all have issues, but I wouldn't even know what they are because we don't have those kinds of conversations in my family.
Right.
Now it's all superficial type of conversation, so.
And it sounds like Dad offered you some powerful modeling by arriving, even though there were conflicting realities for them in life, the modeling that he offered of being here for Mom, even in the state of conflict they were in, to be able to do
exactly.
That. And that's what love is capable of. That's what love
yeah.
can do. The non-being kind of love, the love that people call, you know, the sexual athletics kind of stuff and the self-sacrificing kind of stuff. No, it doesn't have that capability. But in being, we can come forward and hold that space for even the deepest, darkest person we know and the realities that they hold, because that's what human life is designed to be able to do. To be that space no matter what, and to be empowered in that space. And you go back to Yeshua 2,000 years ago, and he says, you know, the things I do, I mean, literally, the things I do, you too can do. And what was he? But he was the space. I mean, literally, the space for all the world. So we'll enlarge the circle and take it to the next level.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so I definitely do that where I see an opening, you know, I share things that have helped me and you know, where there doesn't seem to be an opening, I don't try and force my way in. You know, when people are ready, they open up to it and they're there, right? Ready to receive.
And sometimes long before people are ready to receive, if someone's there modeling the possibility, it helps them
yeah.
to build the brain cells. You know, people can't decide to do something. They can choose to do something they have no brain cells for, because inspiration can come from being. But people who live on the level of the mind can't choose to do something they have no brain cells for. They can only live by the decisions in their minds. And so, you know, what we're working to do is to support people to bring in that new level of awareness called being, where the power of choice, the power of original creation lies, where living strictly from the mind level, which is what most of the world is doing, all that can happen is replicate whatever's been there. And so opening a space for new levels of awareness, new levels of creative ability is another aspect of this work that I think is really important.
Yeah.
I think too, a lot of times we ascribe to people who are living out of their minds, or pardon me, I guess I should say living in their minds, don't know how to be out of their minds, and they're making decisions based on generations and generations and generations of experience of those things that aren't true about us as humans, that when we open that other level of capacity, that other level of being, that's when we really move beyond decisions and start to make true choices, which absolutely changes the whole game because it introduces a whole different level of creation into the world. And the world has been starving for it for so long.
Mm-hmm.
So we're delighted and honored to be here supporting you in being fed and feeding the world.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it. Your tools have definitely been a big help for me, and I'm grateful.
Sweet. That's awesome. Well, we're here to support you anytime.
Okay.
All right. Love and blessings.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Okay. Take care. Bye-bye. Sweet, sweet, sweet. That's what makes it all worthwhile. And we are just entering into the chapter on clarifying love, chapter 18 from Why Is This Happening to Me Again in our reading. So I'm going to read a couple of paragraphs from that chapter. And we're talking to this character, Richard, about what the word love means. And I've just pointed out that to be the space of love, to function as who we are, we've got to straighten out the definition of the word. And he had just asked me the question, well, boy, if somebody's assaulting you or what have you, who could possibly do anything other than have anger or fear at that? Anger or hate actually is the word he uses. And my offering is, well, the person who can do that is a person who doesn't have anger or hate in them. And Richard comes back with, but he interjected, it's like, stay with me for a minute, Richard. Remember, our goal is to let go of the old beliefs and manipulative teachings long enough to build some new brain cells. If when I'm finished, what I've said doesn't make sense, throw it out and go back to the old way. Love in Aramaic does not mean cooperate with and help the person who's beating up on you. It does not mean accept every atrocity with a smile and pretend that all is well when it is not. Love does not mean that you don't hold people accountable for their behavior. Love is not a passive state of suppressing your anger so you look like a saint, I reported. Ah, so it's okay to get angry when someone abuses you, Richard said gleefully. I thought so. I replied to Richard, the reality in your head is giving you information not delivered by my words. It's okay to get angry with someone if you want your mind to be stupid while you interact with them, I replied. What's that supposed to mean? Richard almost shouted. It sounds like you're playing games with me, and I don't like it. There's an old saying that the truth will set you free, but first it's going to bring up all your anger and your rage, I said, half jokingly, in an attempt to lighten the energy a little. And there's a key thought in this section of the book. We're on page 114, if you're following along with us. And the key thought is that a mind without love is stupid. And the definition we would offer there of stupid is not the culture's definition. The definition we would offer is all it can give you is more of the same. It can only replicate what's in it. unless love is present. Love, being a state of being, is where original creation comes from. If the actual presence of being, if the actual presence of love is not in the mind, then one is locked into that replicate state. Same, you know, SSDD, same stuff, different day. We're looking to move beyond that. And because it is only that aspect of being that we describe with the word love that is capable of bringing in something new and something different, we recognize that the mind, left to its own devices and not fueled by conscious act of present love, simply replicates the dynamics of its generations, and in particular, its power person dynamics. And one of the last things that the mind stuck in its power person dynamics wants to do is look at and deal with those power person dynamics. Being has to wake up to and choose to go toward willingness to look at what's really going on within one's own behavior as they stand in projection of others. And so clarifying love, that's page 114, a couple paragraphs from that, and we'll carry on with it on Monday again. We are, I guess, getting up to a little better than halfway through the book. And if you want to get a copy of this book, it is not in print anymore. However, Amazon and eBay always have copies available, so you can go on either of those sites and look for why is this happening to me again and what you can do about it. And or you can go to our website, whyagain.org, and it's there free. You can download it to your phone, to your computer, what have you, print it, read it digitally. Whyagain.org is where you'll find the book in several different languages. And if you look there and the language you want isn't there and it's a language that you speak, we would implore you to connect with us and choose to translate it. No, there's no money involved. We're not, you know, in a big, you know, money operation that we're going to go and pay to have every translation made, but every translation that's been done so far has been done by someone who's benefited from the work and said, I want this to be available for people that speak my language. So, you know, if you speak a language that this book isn't translated into at this point, we've got some new material. So if you connect with us, we'll send you that new material. And if you choose to translate it, then we will gladly put it on our website free so that anyone who speaks the language you happen to translate it into will have it available. So, and we've got everything from Farsi. I think that was one of the most delightful translations that someone volunteered to do. We had a woman from Tehran, Iran, who contacted us back several years ago now. And, you know, we told her, well, we'll put your name on the acknowledgement. She said, no, you can't do that. I'm in Tehran. You don't understand. You can't put my name on it, but I want to translate it because the worksheets have changed my life. So I want it to be available. And so the book is available in Farsi. I believe at this point her name is on the translation. And we went back and forth a couple of times where I guess politically it wasn't safe to put her name out there. And so she would contact us and take my name off the translation. And then a year later, 2 years later, it's okay to put it back on again. Go ahead. I don't know. I don't remember. You might remember Jeannie, but a couple of times we went through that with her. Anyway, it is delightful to be able to provide these tools and help people to build the brain cells for a different way of living. So, and delighted to have you be part of the conversation and providing the listening ears. And, of course, to be part of the conversation, you have to speak. So now it's your turn to push one. How can we support you? What's on your mind? Is there something in this conversation that needs clarification, that isn't making sense, that we can add to? Any issues you're dealing with that we can support you with? what's happening in your world? And we'd love to hear from you. This is this show is designed to be a dialogue. I don't know how we could measure how many hours of dialogue there have been over the last 10 years doing this, you know, an hour to 2 hours a day, and with Dr. Tim taking on the second hour and doing his show. But we've got thousands and thousands of hours of some very, very powerful conversations of people looking at some major issues and using the tools to work through them. If you're not making use of the tools, we invite you to go to our website. Again, why again? W-H-Y, the word why, as in why is this happening to me again? Why again, AGAIN.org. And if you look in the upper left-hand corner, you'll see a link that says start here. And if you click that link, it'll walk you through everything we've learned in the last 50 years about how the true first century Aramaic process of forgiveness works, the opposite of what this culture teaches as forgiveness is what you'll be learning there. You can also go to your app store on your phone and type in the words Heartland. You type that in as one word, H-E-A-R-T-L-A-N-D, Aramaic, A-R-A-M-A-I-C, forgiveness. And if you type those words in, you'll be looking at the world's only forgiveness app. Miss Jean picked up the reins back, I'm not even sure, Jean, 3, 4 years ago, 5 years ago. And it was actually another company that said they were going to take on creating an app, but they decided it was just too expensive to do and dropped the project. So Jean picked it up, and golly, I don't even know how many early mornings, 5 o'clock in the morning, the alarm would go off, and Jean would be on the phone with a technologist in India who were doing the technical design as Jeannie laid out. Here's what we want it to look like. And so now you can introduce children to forgiveness through the app with the drag-on, cling-on game, you know, and teaching children that there are things that you really don't want to be dragging on in your world. You want to forgive them, remove those things from your structure. There are things that unconsciously cling on to us. I think that's the Klingons in that space series. And forgiveness is how you loosen the claws of the Klingons and you let loose of the things you drag on that have been dragging on in your generations for many years. So there's a 26-step game there for kids. And then there are two different versions of the actual forgiveness process, the worksheet step by step, and the most recent update that Jeannie did just a couple months ago was that integrates now the commitment. And so that's all available on the app. You can use it on your phone or your tablet and put the tools to work. And, of course, as you put the tools to work, it usually leads to questions. And we want to hear the questions. You know, oftentimes somebody comes forward with a question. They say, well, you know, this is probably a silly question. This one isn't very meaningful. And it's like it opens a whole new arena of understanding for me. It's not an arena my brain had ever gone or I'd ever conceived of. And so, I don't know, you may hold the key to the next opening in this work to bring it into an even greater fullness than it is at this point. So we'd love to hear your voice. If you're on one of those stations where we can't see you in our control panel, if you dial into the radio show, you can listen to the show on your phone. The call-in number is 563-999-3581. And when you dial that number, you're listening to the show. And if you have a question, when you push 1 through the magic of technology, a hand goes up in Jeannie's control panel on her computer. She is the show's engineer and chief supporter. And she'll introduce you by your area code, and we'll be having a conversation. How can we support you? Have you heard from any more from anybody, Jeannie, from the show that you played from the women's intensive, that rollicking intensive that you had?
No, I haven't heard anything else. And for those of you also, and I hadn't even said anything to Michael yet, I was up with India early this morning, too. The app, for some reason, has quit printing,
And so we're working on that.
Ouch.
And hopefully I'll have that. Hopefully I'll have that done here in another day.
Hmm. That's strange. That was what inspired the last round of work you had to do on it, wasn't it? Wasn't it a problem with bruising?
Yeah, it did. And this issue actually has something to do with the first developer. And so getting our second developer and our first developer working together to get this figured out. So, but we're working on it. So just give
cool.
us a few days.
Okay,
Thanks for your patience.
Yeah, the app, actually one of the things that we purposely designed into it was a lack of permissions. You know, most apps, you put them on your phone and it wants to monitor your calls and it wants to be able to dial your dialer and send texts and edit your contacts and store your contacts and share your contacts with all their marketing agents and blah, 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 blah. And we purposely set this up so it only requires one permission to operate, and that permission is, I got to use the internet. That's the only thing it asks. And when you give it permission, you're using the forgiveness process, the worksheet right there on your phone, the commitment, what have you. And then if you do choose to print, when you complete a worksheet, if you disconnect or shut the program down, you know, that just disappears back into the digital world. It's gone. It's not stored anywhere. But if you choose to, there's a PDF button that you can push, and you can print it so you can save your work. So only you have access to it. And if you do that, it's going to ask for one more permission. That is permission to write to your drive so it has somewhere to store it. So we'll hold that that will get resolved sooner rather than later. And we'll look forward to the next time we upgrade it and add still more components to that app. So are you out there with a question for us? If so, push one. Let's have a conversation. 563-999-3581.
We actually have two hands up.
Let's
say
hello.
So the first one? Yeah, the first one is, I believe, Magda 828. You're on the air.
Hello, hello, hello. It is Magda.
Welcome, young lady. Good to hear your voice. What's on your mind today?
Well, this will be real short so you can get to the next caller. I'm calling for two reasons. I want to thank Ellen so very much for being willing to share her process on the air. I just think it's marvelous that she did that because it gives all of us more willingness to step into the safety that you all offer and Dr. Kim offers. Because she knows, and I know, and we all know that there's nothing but love. There's only love coming from you. So thank you, Ellen, for being brave enough, if you want, to call it that, to share. And it was great to hear your process. So that was one thing. And then my second reason for calling is to ask you if you are familiar with a Dr. Gabor Mate, G-A-B-O-R, first name,
yes.
Last name, M-C-E. You are.
Yeah, he's
okay.
A Canadian physician that works with people in trauma. I'm somewhat familiar with his work.
Yes. I've just discovered him this last week, and I love the way that he explains the very same concepts and principles that you do in terms of everything that we are dealing with now came from our trauma during childhood. And I especially like the way he goes into the fact that traumas that we experienced during childhood were not necessarily what the world would call traumatic, but it is the way that we experience
right.
what happened. Yeah. So
okay. The way we make it up, the way we receive it. So what in particular, if you would, I'd like to hear it, and because you obviously have the brain cells that heard the way Gabor, you know, puts his understanding out there, what impacted you most? I'd like to just have you share that with our audience if you could, and I'd like to get a taste of it too in case I've missed it, because I know he's done some just awesome work in the world, and you know, there's always learning that we can do from people who are stepping up to the plate and doing that level of work.
Well, you know, there are actually some interviews that I'd like to listen to again and take some notes, and then I would be way better at telling you the high points that I appreciate. However, what I can think of right now is kind of an extension of what I said just a little minute ago, that the way he explains the traumas that we experience and carry with us, and then react to when we have a trigger later in our life, that when we mistakenly have often thought they have to be really big, horrible things, but necessarily they are not. They are just how we perceived it, because, of course, it is, as you say, our perception that is most important. And then he also added that because of where the parents are in their energetic being, the traumas don't even have to be spoken. And that carries the information that
they don't have to be, did you say that again? They don't have to be?
They don't have to be spoken or acted out.
Oh, right.
And just as you teach us that they can be generational, and the child can perceive it and feel it. He gives one example that I really like about how it is that we make these erroneous decisions that I have made many of, and lots of us have, maybe all of us humans. And that, let me see how the example goes. I'll make one up. A parent wants the child to do something. To put away his toys, let's say. And the child wants to keep playing and so chooses not to put away the toys. And the parent then says, good little girls and boys put away their toys when they're told to. And then acts very icy toward the child for the next 3 days, 2 days, 2 hours.
Right.
And what the child gets is not just that he or she is not a good little boy or girl. What the child perceives is, if you don't do what I want, I will not love you. If you don't put away your toys when I ask you to, you do not get loved. And so, because that feels like a life and death survival thing, needing to be loved and connected to the caretaker, the child decides to submit, always submit, always submit. And I'm not explaining it.
Controlled by no, I think you're explaining it perfectly. So now we have a child who grows up as the obedient adult. Every authority simply has to raise their finger, and the child, because of the threat that surfaced in them in interaction with that power person, you know, there's the power person dynamic, that forevermore, when that comes to the surface, unless they forgive and resolve that, it's going to drive and control their lives. And they're going to be controlled by authorities who are telling them to do things that are silly, stupid, ridiculous to do. But, oh, if I want to survive, I have to follow this authority. Yeah, that's exactly right on track.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's interesting you bring that particular situation up. I had a situation similar to that yesterday with Aria, and we were out playing with her. She had a little pool, and she has a couple of blow-up animals and some a little container of balls that she plays with, and she left them out on the grass and said, well, we need to clean up now before we go, and we were going to jump on a trampoline. And we talked about, well, we have to put this away before we start to do that. Well, I don't want to do that. And she just walked away. And I said, well, it's okay if you want to. But remember that, you know, we get all kinds of wonderful things given to us in life, and we take care of them. And if we don't take care of them, then they're not going to be there the next time we want to use them. So, you know, if we put these toys away, then I know you like to play with them. They'll be there the next time. But, you know, if we just leave them out there in the lawn, you know, maybe an animal will come and take them or bite them and destroy them. And the things you want won't be there for you. As opposed to, you know, the authority, you have to put your toys away. And the difference of night and day. And that's, and in Aramaic, that's discipline, which the word in our culture has become properly beat up, but it's really just means properly taught. Oh, yeah. It's to my benefit to put my toys away because they'll be there. Oh, I got it. Okay. And she just turned around and, you know, we put them away, which is fine. But it was a perfect example to come forward, and I just went through that with her yesterday.
Excellent, excellent so, example yeah. of how to parent very, very beautifully. There is something else I just thought of I remember from one of Dr. Mate's lectures, and it is about, of course, what you teach in your work, that when we have a trigger, it is actually triggering something that's very old to come to the surface, and something that seemed to be very powerful in explaining the use of the trigger. Because that's a word that we use all the time, but how many people actually use a gun or an explosive that has a trigger? Very few of us. So he kind of made it real,
right.
And he said, you know, the thing is, you've got the explosives within you. You have all of the material that is ready to become a bomb and explode with anger, explode with fear, whatever it is. All you need is for someone to pull that little tiny trigger. And your reaction may be huge, totally out of proportion. That's because it is within you. And I thought that was it made it more real for me. I didn't think
that's
that
a powerful example.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was cool to hear the things that you've been teaching for a long time, and always helps me to hear them in slightly different words. You know, for my
brain
to be approached. Yeah, approaching the brain from another direction. Yeah. So give another caller, Michael.
Well, that's okay. We're with you right now. And, you know, we play, you know, you've heard this rule 1,000 times. If we're talking to you, we're with you till we're complete. And the next caller will be with them 100% when we're with them. But another fine point of the conversation that I'm, it's just a kind of clarifying for me, is recognizing that this event happens and the energetic dynamics of the event are whatever they are, and trigger that event brings up something from the past that is linked to pain or trauma. One of two things is going to happen. We're either going to combine the two through the file folder effect. The unresolved pain and trauma is going to become linked to our brain's image of this person, and we'll carry it forward as a trauma, or we'll enter into processing that circumstance. That is, we'll be in the space of holding to conscious, active, present love while this internal bomb opens up. And because we've maintained the presence of love, whatever the explosive device is within, it's going to heal instead of get linked to yet another triggering event in our lives. And people who don't have tools, who don't use the tools, they go from trigger to trigger to trigger to trigger to trigger. And then, you know, anything or nothing can set them off into days, weeks, months, years of depression and pain and trauma, where the person who says, well, I don't like looking at this thing that's coming up within me, but I'm willing, and opens it and moves through it, they diffuse all of those bombs, and life becomes an experience of peace and aliveness rather than trying to hide from our triggers.
Right. I have a question that comes up from what you just said, though. You said, mm-hmm. when the explosion happens, if we're in a state of love, it will be removed. Is that it?
Yeah. Remember our definition of processing, that processing is the capacity to hold love conscious, active, and present when something less than love comes up. So I have an old issue that every time anybody gets near it, I stop breathing. Somebody shows up and resonates that, and there it is in my face, and I link into my brain's image of them. If I do not experience that event from a state of being, but if I breathe and I consciously, purposely recognize that I can stay present as love with this experience, then I'm going to process that experience, which means I'm going to dissolve the links. I'm going to dissolve the explosive pain that's attached to it and remove it or forgive it from my structure rather than carry it on and unconsciously link it to something or somebody else.
Right. So would it be true to say that after being able to dissolve that that explosive reaction a number of times, perhaps because we are able to process in the moment, because we are dedicated to and know enough about holding love, conscious, active, and present. After many, many times of doing this with one kind of situation, that after a while, we won't even have the explosion. That the thing
exactly.
that used to get triggered, that used to become an explosion, is just like, oh, this is the
It's been forgiven. You know, as opposed to we've been forgiven for it, it has been forgiven. It's been removed. We're done with it. There's no such thing as being forgiven for something. But when we are forgiving, removing those energetic dynamics that hold those old traumas, we're finished with them. That's the real forgiveness process. And to me, it's such a disaster that the religionists of many different faiths took this idea of processing and healing and turned it into God forgiving us or somebody else forgiving us, which is the total fallacy that never has happened, never will happen, never could happen, because there's not a judgment there to be forgiven in that Greek sense of it, but that we choose to continuously live and process and move through those layers.
Yeah. Oh, yes, good. Okay, thank
Yay.
You.
All right, young lady, we appreciate you.
And you, both of you, and everyone else out there, blessings to everyone. I'm going to listen.
Okay, give Chuck a hug for us.
Shall do.
Okay. All right, Miss Jeannie, you've got a hand up for us?
Yes, and I believe it's Judy, 417. You're on the air.
Just for your input.
Hi there, young lady.
Sharing.
Welcome.
Thank you.
And delighted.
Me too. I'm always honored and delighted to have contact with you and Jeannie. I have been thinking about the mind of the body, and it just dawned on me today. Well, I do these little word things on the phone, you know, these word games.
Uh-huh.
and my automatically can come up with some of the words that normally I wouldn't be able to come up with. I didn't even know how to spell them. But the body does. And I've been noticing that more and more. But today, it crossed my mind that when you're in the fight or flight mode, which is an automatic thing for the body to get into when you're in danger. Let's say you are in the fight and flight mode and you don't see a way out. What are you going to do?
Now picture this, Judy. You've been in a number of intensers. Picture it. I'm going to turn around with my marker in my hand, and what am I going to write on the board? Go on, you say it.
Normally, you just the thing that I remember is all of the above.
All of the above. It's every tool we've got. So what am I going to do? Am I going to breathe? Am I going to take out a worksheet? Am I going to focus and
what
purposely
if you don't,
connect
what if
to
you
love?
Don't have time? What if you don't have time to take out a worksheet,
you don't,
Michael?
You don't have time not to do one of the tools.
Well, that's true. That's true.
You know, remember, we've got that simple three-step short form of the worksheet you can do. Oh, I have a goal. I cancel my goal. I have to be restored to love. There's always, I mean, how long did that take me? I cancel my need for this person to honor and cherish me, and I ask Rooker to come in and heal this pain that's moving in me. How long did it take? I always have time for that.
Well, let's say you're in Africa, and one of the wild animals is, you're facing one of them. You still do the same thing.
If I'm a wild animal's heading for me, while I move into the sympathetic dominant state, which is where I want to be at that moment, so I have as much power in my muscles as I can possibly have, I'm going to be canceling the goal as well. You know, there's a cute story about the fellow who's a Christian, and he's out with some friends, and they're in the woods, and as they're in the woods, there's this bear comes up, roaring up, chasing him, and, you know, right behind him, and, you know, he's like, what am I going to do? And he's praying all the way, and his prayer as he's running is, God, let this bear be a Christian. God, let this bear be a Christian. And the bear's paw whacks him across the back of the head and knocks him out cold. And when he wakes up, here's this bear kneeling over him with his hands folded. We thank you, Father, for this food.
Oh, my goodness.
So, yeah, the sympathetic state is there for a reason. And when I need it, I want to have it. But that doesn't mean I have to go unconscious and forget that I also have tools. You know, I remember we were doing an intensive in North Florida. There was a retreat center there, and it was out in a remote area of Florida. And one of the participants would go out running in the morning. He liked to run. That was his thing. And he came back one morning, and he had gone down one of the little side roads, and a couple of, I don't even remember what kind of German shepherds, but big, nasty, snarling dogs came at him. And we had been doing, just the day before, we'd been doing a love exchange. And he said, I was ready to turn and run, and I knew I couldn't outrun those dogs, and they'd tear me to shreds. He said, and I stopped, and he said, I did a love exchange with them, and they just stopped snarling, stopped snapping, walked around, turned around, and walked away from him.
Yeah, I could see the bear chasing me. I can see that. I can also see a bear chasing me and me saying, help me hold space of love for this bear while I'm running.
Yes.
Okay, so that's basically it. We just go back to
every tool you've got. And that's one of the reasons for using the tools on an ongoing basis. You enter into a practice until it becomes first nature to just go there. You don't have to stop and think about what I'm going to do. I've done this enough. You know, it's just, I can remember when I was a kid learning to drive, and, you know, I was raised in a place where, you know, 6-foot snowbanks weren't unusual. And I'd go out into a mall parking lot, and I would just tear from one end of that parking lot to the other, braking hard, accelerating, turning this way, turning that way, until on the highway, it was second nature. It was already in my nervous system to be able to do that. You want to use these tools so that in a crisis, they're part of your nervous system and part of the automatic decision system. So you just go there without having to
think about
it. And it all
works together.
And it all works together. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
And sometimes
we forget. Up to the point that we can become conscious enough, we're acting out of our body's response system.
Correct. Well, that's it. The automatic decision system takes over what you're doing. Remember, when we do the personal code evaluation, we're giving people feedback for here's where your most important work is right now. And as you do these assignments, there is your how to put it, to change your personal code so that the automatic decision system kicks into the higher behavior rather than the lower one that you did when you didn't have tools. So we're looking to shift that personal code. Remember, the mind has a set of rules that it follows whether you want it to follow it or not. You know, you say to yourself, oh, there's person who, you know, they've threatened me before, and I know that I want to be loving to them, and so from now on, whatever they do, I'm going to be loving. And then they give you the look. What happened to the choice to be loving? It's gone, and the automatic decision system takes over, and, you know, maybe I rage or whatever it is, or go into defensive posture or run away or whatever. When I recognize that's what's in my automatic decision system, I apply forgiveness to that to remove that reaction and to put in a new action that has been consciously chosen, that when it becomes my reaction, it's the right one. It's the one that supports me because I've consciously, purposely chosen to put that into my nervous system enough that it's now my first nature to behave that way. And that's why it's an ongoing process of work, especially if you're the first one in the family system, the early adopter that said, well, I'm going to do this. Well, you know, how many layers? Jeshua said, well, 77 times 70 times is how often I'm going to need to forgive, to remove that from my automatic decision system or my nervous system and to structure in something different.
So in other words,
that's
it's practice, practice, practice.
The rule of the three P's. You've heard me say that before. Yes, for sure.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you so much for that input. I appreciate it.
Delighted and honored, young lady. Anything else on your mind for today?
No, not right now. Just grateful
all right.
for
well,
you
have
all.
A blessed one.
Thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye.
And we for you, too. All right. Blessings. Bye-bye. So we appreciate you being here to play with us, and if you're not aware of it, check your email. If you're on our email list, Jeannie did send out a newsletter just a couple of days ago, and we have a new program that we're just instituting, and it's going to be a membership for engaging in and really becoming expert at utilizing the Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing tools. So take a look for the email, and or if you go to our website, whyagain.org, in the upper right-hand corner, there's a button that says flyers. If you click that, I assume, Jeannie, that the flyer for that membership is on the flyer section on our website. So people can go there if you want the details on it. We've got, you know, there'll be any month of the year we're going to do the second Saturday of each month, we're going to do a Still Point Breathing workshop. And then the Wednesday that follows will be a two-hour Zoom session on top of the Saturday Still Point that will be Q&A and processing time. And then there are a couple of videos that are included that will give you access to the Mind Shifter tool and how to utilize it. We've got an expanded Mind Shifter tool that we're working on. So all of that's covered in there. So you can do a one-month membership, any month that you choose, or you can do a three-month membership. You can choose to do any 3 months of the year. You can do a year at a time. So that flyer's there. Join us and become part of that process. In the meantime, create the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world, and blessings. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio.
with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mindshifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.